Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 20th, 2001. In the fireside room this morning is Tara Clinton-Barthel. Today's session number is KBT 2001-04, and it's titled Helping Children to Promote Biblical Reconciliation. Let's listen in.
Curriculum that can be used. It's used in, some people use it in the public schools, Christian schools, homeschooling, family devotions. These are actually standalone booklets that children ages, I think it's like 8 to 11, can do on their own, but the same principles down to like three-year-olds. I used it with our niece when she was about four. So that's the Young Peacemaker curriculum. Okay, here's your first pop quiz for the day. Of all these biblical principles and these materials that we developed, we use the same biblical principles in multi-million dollar lawsuits and with the little kids. Who do you think applies them better and faster?
Children.
Okay, who said that over here? It's like, first one, you get the prize. Yes, children apply the principles faster and better than adults. Why is that? Isn't it often because as adults we have ingrained patterns that are actually destructive instead of constructive concerning conflict? And so what I'd like to hopefully do, the structure I'm hoping we can follow, is I would like to give you guys a little pep cheer, you know, be your biggest fans for, hey, this is really important, and why is peacemaking so important? Let's work with our children when they're young, so that when they're older, they're gonna intuitively and instinctively respond to conflict in this constructive way. Now, what is the primary learning community for the children? Now, lots of children learn from lots of different communities, but the primary learning community for theological, social, relational skills, of course, is the family, right? In general, you're gonna learn most from your parents, from your siblings. Now, that's gonna go out to the Holden Village, right? The church, different community structures, but in general, we have a responsibility to shepherd our children in this worldview, to help equip them. One of the things we're going to talk more about in these Young Peacemaker curriculum, you'll see it, is that it's not just enough, and actually I could even just grab the Bible, right? It's not just enough to give them kind of surfacey level stuff. We need to dig down to the heart. Because when you're dealing with a child, right, and it's like this, Aunt Tara, may I please have a cookie? Oh, sorry, Samuel, you know, honey, it's just about time for dinner, and I think you better wait so we don't spoil your appetite for dinner. But I want a cookie! Has anybody ever seen that in their lives, right?
I mean, never.
You know, you go, wow, where did that sweet, docile, loving little boy go, right? And you watch, in the Young Peacemaker curriculum, we call those monster wants, right? We take a desire, it's elevated to a demand, the demand gets frustrated, and then there's anger, right? Or there's a blowout. Is it just enough to say, Samuel, go to your room? You're not even gonna have dinner tonight, right? Well, that's gonna deal with the actual situation before us, but it doesn't deal with his heart, right? What happened to his heart that he would, according to biblical principles, James 4:1, what causes the fight and the quarrel, the monster want? Doesn't it come from the desires that battle within us? Samuel wanted something but didn't get it, right? That's James 4:1. So we want to apply these principles to heart issues. It's not enough to just, you know, deal with the actual surface level thing. We want to actually go deeper to the heart. Now, for those of you who have not attended any of our previous sessions, so we could all stand up and do this as a big team, but just for a quick review, let me just walk you through the Peacemaker brochure that you have in front of you. Those of you who've been here, you guys can just veg out for like the next 2 minutes while I do a quick review. This brochure is an embarrassment to Peacemaker Ministries, because if you look at it, it's 20 years of ministry on one piece of paper. So, you know, but it's actually a lot of helpful stuff. So the first thing I want to encourage you to check out is The Slippery Slope, if you've not already done so. What's your general response to conflict? Do you like to run away from conflict, the blue zone, the escape zone? Or are you more prone to attack, to kind of really dig in there, right, jump in there? Even look at the personalities of your children. Do you have one who's kind of, oh, they're the calmer over kind of personality? And then there's one that's always in there defending, attack, right? So what's the personality? What's the general response to conflict? Then, of course, the work it out response is here at the top, the conciliation zone. We actually have taken that slippery slope and adapted it for use for children. And I actually like the children's slippery slope even better. And I encourage you guys to check this out at the bookstore even more formally, but it simplifies it. It goes actually, you can see here it says escape, work it out, and attack. Those are the three zones to help children. And they covered it with popcorn butter. So instead of an icy dome, it's like covered in popcorn butter, hot butter. And they say here, what's the first kind of escape response children prone to? Deny. Tara, did you take that money from my dresser? Oh no, I didn't do that, right? We deny it, no, not me. Or we do the blame game, right? We try to blame somebody else. Well, you know, maybe I threw that Lego truck at her, but she was the one who, right? So we do the blame game. And then of course, run away from the conflict. So the children's slippery slope is a little different. But this actually, I think we have a big poster you can purchase even. People put it on their kids' walls or on their public schools' rooms or whatever. Attack, what's a standard attack from children? Put downs, right? Don't they put each other down? What's another? Gossip. Kids generally understand what the word gossip means. They're going to speak bad things about each other. Or to fight, of course. Now, what's the three work it out responses? Again, we sort of take the adult material and simplify it for the children. The first one is we're going to try to overlook. Same verse for adults as children, Proverbs 19:11. A man's wisdom gives him patience. It is to his glory to overlook an offense. So we want to encourage children as much as possible to overlook. Now there's a lot of things to overlook in the life of a child, right? They're constantly needing to overlook. Talk, that's the middle one. Let's just go, let's talk about it. Let's work through it. But what's the third? Get help. If you're a little child and you've tried to overlook it or you've tried to go and talk and you're getting stuck, you don't just give up, but you go and you get help. So does that make sense how the adult material is kind of modified for the children's use? I find it to be very helpful. So these responses as far as attack and escape responses are standard responses, but we know, of course, that God wants us to do something more constructive with conflict. This is what we want to help children to see, that when they have a conflict, when they're in a battle with someone, when somebody at school is teasing them, right? When their parents are not listening to them. Kids think that a lot. My mom just doesn't listen to me, right? There's a conflict there. They have an opportunity, and what is that opportunity? Well, we summarize, of course, the Peacemaker's Pledge on your little brochure as the four G's. The first and foundational point we want all children to understand is that they were not created, and myself as a child, right? We need to understand we're not created for our own pleasure. We're created for God's glory. So everything we want to do, we want to be thinking, how can I glorify God? This is actually 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do you guys know how conflicted the church was in Corinth? I mean, if you look at the book of Corinthians, they had conflicts over so many things. The Lord's Supper, divorce, remarriage, what are some other ones? Lawsuits, marriage, divorce, remarriage, celibacy, food and wine, apostolic rites, worship, spiritual gifts, the resurrection. Like that church was just conflicted. And this is what the Apostle Paul says to us, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. We talked about how you can do that, and especially helping children. How can you glorify God in a conflict? Well, you can trust him. Right? If we're in a conflict and we just get so frightened, we're overwhelmed by it, we forget that God is sovereign and that he's good. So helping children especially to see, while they're in the midst of that specific conflict, that God is still God, right? He is trustworthy. We can put our faith in him. But we can also help children to see that they have the opportunity to serve the other person in the conflict, right? We can actually help them. And of course, the children themselves can grow to be like Christ. Now, we already talked about monster wants, the idols that grow within us, but what would be some idols that are common in a family? Can you think of any good desires that might be elevated to a demand, even in the family? Like moms. How about mothers? What idols might mothers have? Good desires that they elevate to demands. I'm sorry?
Cleanliness,
order, especially for the type A people like me, right? I like my little, oh, the Container Store, it's nirvana, right? I love the Container Store. Order can be, is that a bad desire? Of course not. It's a good, but a lousy God. Okay, cleanliness. What other idols might mothers have?
Good grades.
Right, a good desire. But if it's elevated to a demand and the demand gets frustrated, then there can be a lot of conflict in the home, right? How about children? What idols might children have? I want
the latest
thing they see on television.
I want material things. Yeah. Oh, how much conflict is there over desires for a toy, right? I want a desire for clothing items for teenagers, right? Preteens, good desires, possibly might even be bad desires. Good desires elevated to a demand. What other idols might children have?
My free time is my own, and you can't make me do anything.
Stay away from me, Mom. Or Dad, I don't want to listen to you. I want to be by myself. Is it a good thing for kids to want to have some quiet time, grow in them? Absolutely. But if it means they're going to be rebelling against their parents, they're going to be disrespectful to their parents again. Okay, how about dads? Any idols in the dad world that might come up?
The lawn.
The lawn might be an idol, yes. How about when he comes home at the end of a hard work day? I want to relax, right? I want to veg. Ken Sandy tells a story that he was really, really, really working long hours trying to get Peacemaker Ministries going, and he'd come home, and all he wanted to do was just sit in front of the TV and just veg, you know, just totally relax. And one day, his little daughter, Megan, came downstairs and climbed into his lap and just snuggled up against him, and then she said, "Dad, don't you think that when a daddy comes home, he should play with his children instead of watching television?" Ken said his heart, you know, you could confront him all you wanted, but this sweet little girl was the one who pierced through his heart. How about peace and quiet? Can peace and quiet be an idol in the home? Yes, absolutely. Okay, can we think of these specific idols that lead to conflicts and then apply what we're talking about? So this is where there's a disjunct. If you just look at it and go, oh yeah, that makes sense, yeah, that makes sense, But then we don't ever apply it to our real life situation. So right now, in the lives of your children, for young people, even as what possibly is it that they are elevating to a demand, and the demand might be getting frustrated? How about friends? I'm in a prayer group, and one of my prayer partners, it's really a struggle because her 11-year-old, 12-year-old girl is really suffering right now because she doesn't have a good friend. You know, she's really lonely. She's really sad. And it makes the parents get mad. You know, they're like, my daughter's great. Why won't someone be her friend, right? That kind of ostracizing and polarizing. How can we equip our children through that? Well, it's difficult. And I don't want to stand before you and pretend that it's not. I'm not saying this is easy. This work of peacemaking is actually very, very hard. But how important is it? Well, Jesus said, when Jesus was asked, "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law?" Do you remember this in Matthew 22? What was Jesus' response that was the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. And the second greatest commandment, Jesus said, was to excel in academics. To become the first chair violinist in the local symphony. No. It was to be the best soccer player on the team. That was the second greatest. Jesus said, even though those are worthy pursuits, right? And we apply ourselves to that, don't we? I mean, I help my kids with piano lessons, with soccer. We're going to practice reading. We're going to practice math. No, Jesus said, the second greatest commandment is?
Love one another.
Love your neighbor as yourself. If you have a neighbor, you have conflict, right? Relationship necessarily involves conflict. You've got different personalities, different goals, different life values. I mean, that if you have a neighbor, you have conflict. But Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, if you're going to love your neighbor as yourself, that's peacemaking. That's this foundational story we're trying to tell. Peacemaking is nothing more than helping children live out the second greatest commandment. To love their neighbor as theirself. That's why Matthew 5:9 doesn't say, "Blessed are the national merit finalists, for they shall be called the sons of God." Right? It says, no, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Why? Because even children of unbelievers, right? Even those who are just great kids, I mean, they can excel in academics and in sports and in music and in drama and poetry and all these things. But they're not going to show Christ to the world. How are they going to show God? They're going to show God because they're going to be peacemakers. They're going to be equipped. The primary distinguishing characteristic is that they're going to be peacemakers. Well, let's talk for a few minutes. If we don't raise our children, how to make confessions, how to forgive, grant true and lasting forgiveness, how to understand if they're in the attack zone or they're slipping off the slope into the escape zone. What are some of the natural ramifications that happen if we don't equip our children with those peacemaking skills? What happens? How do they do in their jobs?
They don't hold them very long.
They don't hold them very long. And is it because they don't know the job skill? No. Why do people lose their jobs?
They make bad decisions.
They make bad decisions and?
Conflict.
They have conflict. Right, think about it in your own life. Have you seen people losing jobs because they're working in a restaurant and they don't know how to chop up the food well? Or do they lose that job because they're just in a constant source of conflict with people? You see, peacemaking equips people to be successful in their jobs. I am very young. I have not lived many years, but even in my short years of life, I've hired and I've fired people. I have never yet fired someone because they couldn't do the foundational aspects of their job. I've fired people because they can't get along. They don't work as a member of a team. They don't know what it's like to submit to authority and to lead from a servant heart, those who are in under their authority, right? That's why people lose their jobs. Okay, well, how about in marriage? If we have our children and we're not, you know, we're training them to be excellent academics, they're really good in music, they're really good in sports, they're really, really smart in business, you know, they're good in all these things, but we don't train them up with this peacemaking, what does it look like in their marriages? Conflict, which leads to?
Divorce.
Often divorce. But even if not divorce, what happens with so many marriages where there isn't divorce but there's a lot of unhappiness, right? Do you know people who are in an emotional divorce? Even though legally they're married, they don't love one another. They don't bear with one another in humility and graciousness. In fact, they probably don't even know each other anymore. Sleep in separate rooms. My best friend's parents for years slept in separate rooms, lived separate lives, although they were married. Is that marriage? No, God says marriage, the picture we see in Ephesians 5, is one of the husband loving the wife as Christ loved the church, right? And the woman building up the husband just as he's serving her and building. I mean, it's a mutual admiration society, right? I mean, you're intimately bond. But if you're not equipped with peacemaking, you can't really do that, can you? I mean, because in marriage, there's going to be conflict, isn't there? I mean, you see it. You're going to see it all the time. So you see it in marriages. You see it in work. Can anybody think of any other environments where if we are not equipping children to be peacemakers, they're going to have a lot of hardship in their life?
Yeah, I've seen it in school, too, and all the bullying that's happening in schools.
Bullying, yep. Yeah, think about school. When a child is really struggling in school, is it usually because they're not getting the geography? Or what's really causing the sorrow?
It's the relationships they have with others.
It is. How can we... I mean, it's the common link. You look at it, the common link through all of life. I mean, I know I'm sort of like here. It was a lot easier before I worked for Peacemaker Ministries because now it sounds like I'm poofing myself up, you know? But, I mean, it's true. It's like it is so pivotal to life. Peacemaking is about life. I mean, either we are going to be peacemakers or we're not, but we're always going to have conflict. You know, that's the reality. So it's whether or not we're going to be equipped to do it. Well, it's the key ingredient. How can we do it, then? Okay, foundationally. If we as adults are not understanding these biblical principles and living them out daily, can we ever expect our children to pick... I mean, are they going to pick it up by osmosis from the world? Is the world going to teach them how to be peacemakers? I mean, guys, we have to focus our energies because actually the world teaches them to be peace fakers, right? To run away from conflict, deny it exists, or peace breakers, just attack, bring as much pressure to bear until you get your way. Whine and throw a tantrum until they finally just get so fed up with you that they give you what you want, right? That's the teaching. No, how can we teach our children to get up on top of that slippery slope? Well, the first thing is we have to know it ourselves. So for those of you here, I would imagine, I mean, until you came to Holden, had anybody here had any sort of systematic instruction on biblical peacemaking? Raise your hand. I mean, that's it. Most Christian colleges, churches, seminaries, denominations, they train in so many wonderful things, but people are not being equipped. In fact, a recent Christianity Today survey asked pastors, what was the number one thing your seminary education did not equip you for? And you know what they said? All the conflict in my church. You know, I was good to go on the Greek and the Hebrew, and I was okay on the preaching, and I was good to go on evangelism, but I had no idea how to deal with this battle over the third grade curriculum. You know, which color rug do we put in the sanctuary? I just didn't know how to do it. There was no training. So again, for yourselves, if you haven't had that training, it is not too late. It is never too late to start doing the right thing, right? I mean, jump in there and get going. I didn't learn about biblical peacemaking until I was in law school. How funny is that? I mean, in law school, all you're learning to do is fight, you know, and here I am learning how to do peacemaking. So pick up a copy of The Peacemaker if it's helpful to you. But of course, you don't need it. You can just go right to Scripture. But if you want a helpful tool, I encourage you to go over to the Holden Bookstore and get the book and start working through it. A specific thing on that is that often adults, we kind of teach general principles. Does this sound familiar? Things like, well, honey, you need to forgive her. You know, go forgive your friend for knocking you off the bike. So she walks over and says, I forgive you. You know, and then comes back and says, but mommy, I don't want to play with her anymore. Right? I'm going to go play with the street. And then you see your child not in a relationship with that person. So what did we just teach him? You know, a general principle, it's good to forgive. And that's a good thing. But did we teach the child what it means to forgive? What does it look like when we forgive? One of my favorite little monikers in the Young Peacemaker materials, and I wrote these pages down so we don't have to look them up, is you see on your brochure there the four promises of forgiveness. I will not think about this incident. I will not bring this incident up again and use it against you. I will not talk to others about this incident. And I will not allow this incident to stand between us or hinder our relationship. Well, for children, actually, we even have a little keychain with this on it. And I thought I was going to bring some, and I was just going to hand them all out to you, but I forgot them. So I'm really sorry. But anyway, it says, teacher, okay, honey, she knocked you off the bicycle, but she was really sorry, and she did ask you to forgive her. Can you forgive her? Can you forgive your friend for that? Well, what does it mean, mom or dad or uncle or sis, to forgive somebody? Well, here's four things just to help them think through it. Good thought. Hurt you not. Gossip never. Friends forever. So, sweetheart, when you think of your friend, are you going to think about how she knocked you off the bicycle in front of your friends and how it embarrassed you and also scraped your knee and it ruined your brand new dress? Is that what you're going to think about? No. I'm going to think about the time when at my birthday party last year, she made that special present for me, and I knew it took her a long time, and she gave all her allowance money for 2 weeks to give me that present. And what else can you think about her? Well, you know, I kind of am mad because I ruined my favorite dress, and I want to think about that, but no, when I say I forgive her, I'm not going to think about my dress getting ruined. I'm going to think about a time when those people were making fun of me because, at that time at the mall, and she came over and she told them to stop making fun. I'm going to think about that. Okay, we're going to think good thoughts. Well, hurt you not. So I promise I'm not going to. Am I going to tell other people, well, don't go play with her because she's going to knock you off her bicycle, right? No, I'm not going to do things to hurt her. Is this kind of making sense? Do you see? Give children tangible things they can do. Gossip never. I'm not going to talk bad things about her. Friends forever. I'm not going to let our relationship wither, Mom. I want to go down. Even though right now I'm a little sad, you know, and it's a little scary for me because I'm afraid she might hurt me again, I'm going to believe in faith. I'm going to go down. I'm going to try to be her friend again. Now we're helping children understand what forgiveness means. Another general principle we often do with kids is we'll say, well, you need to say you're sorry, right? What does it look like when a kid says they're sorry?
Sorry.
Sorry. Right. Sorry. Sorry, I knocked over your Legos.
Sorry.
Sorry. Okay, that's great, honey. Thanks. I mean, are we teaching children what it means to truly, truly repent? Remember, for those of you who've been further training or future training or past training, I mean, the 7 A's of forgiveness, but again, 7, that's a lot. So the Young Peacemaker curriculum makes it simpler for children. It takes it down to 5 A's, which I did not write the page number down, so I have to find it. But again, so when a child is apologizing, here it is, page 99, what does it look like? We can teach our children to make sincere, heartfelt apologies that look like this. The first A, admit. I'm it. Broke the bond that's tightly fit. We don't say that, but, you know, admit. You know, the first thing a child has to do when they're sorry, I'm going to admit. What am I going to admit specifically? I'm sorry I knocked down your Legos. Apologize, right? Apologize. I'm sorry. Accept. accept the consequences. I understand if I don't get to play in the Lego pool for the rest of the Sunday school class, right? I understand the consequence. Ask. So we're going to ask for forgiveness, right? There's a whole little poem here. I'm not really into the cheesy poem thing, but I'm not a mom, so maybe I'll get into the cheesy poem thing when I get a kid, but or have a kid or adopt a kid. But at any rate, we're going to ask for forgiveness. I'm sorry I knocked down the Legos. I understand if I don't get to play with the Legos again for the rest of our time together. Will you please forgive me? I promise in the future I'm not going to knock down your Legos again. 5 A's. Admit, apologize, accept, ask, and alter. Is that, see, now we're really getting somewhere, right? It's not just, sorry, right? But I am sorry. It's very, very hard. Hey, it's hard for me to make an apology, so it's hard for children as well. Okay, here's one thing. We urge our children, we talk about being forgiving, making confessions. This is a fascinating statistic. We're starting to teach to teenagers now. I shouldn't say fascinating to you. It's fascinating to me. It might be boring to you, but okay. Here's a statistic. You work with teenagers long enough and you ask them, hey, do you have any conflict in your relationships? And you know what they often say?
No.
Ask them the follow-up question. How many friendships do you have that you've had for longer than 1 year? Very, very few. You know what teenagers do? They have a friendship, they bond, something happens, and they go and they get another friend. They have a friendship and they bond, and then some conflict happens, and they go and they get another friend. So see, they have a lot of conflict in their relationships, but they're just fleeing away. They're just in flight and denial, right? They're just going out and getting new friends instead of constructively working through the conflict. I think that's very, very telling, but. Okay, we've gone through a few of the key principles of peacemaking. What I'd like to do, I guess we can just throw it up. Anybody have any questions at this point? My next thing I thought we could take a few minutes to do is go through some of the specifics of the Young Peacemaker curriculum. But does anybody have questions?
Is that something that can be used in their schools, public schools?
It can be. You know, we are actually right now working with an author and publisher to publish a secular Young Peacemaker that's specifically secular. This, of course, has God and Jesus and stuff in it, too. So you have to kind of wait for that. But this was developed in the public schools, and actually we have a lot of teachers in the public schools, for instance, using the slippery slope, because the slippery slope doesn't have this part about church discipline and all of that. You know, it just has the notion. So that poster I know is up in many public schools. So it is a little harder dealing with heart issues because, again, how do you deal with the heart and sin without dealing with the gospel, right? It's kind of like I had my little niece Emily at the playground with her brother, and he had to go home because he had to go potty, and she was so angry. I mean, she was really mad because she wanted to keep playing, and if he didn't have to go potty, we could still be there. And it wasn't enough for me to just put Emily in a chair, you know, and say, Emily, you know, when you have a better attitude, you can come back out and join the family. Because it's like me, when I am, I know what that's like, right? I know what it's like to be mad. I know what it's like to be angry. I know what it's like to be really frustrated. So I went to Emily and I got down on my knees. I went right before her and I just said, you know, I just held out the gospel to her. And I said, Emily, right now, are you really angry? I'm really angry. You could see it in her face. You know, she's a cute little girl, but she was all contorted. And I said, are you really mad? I'm mad. Emily, do you want to be angry and mad? No. I said, because we're out there, we were making like, what's that, Gack or whatever, that play thing. You know, we were having fun, and she wasn't a part of it. You know, she was outside of this bond because of her anger and her bitterness. I said, Emily, do you know what to do? What can you do with all that frustration and anger and bitterness? And she was just like, I don't know. You know, I said, well, Emily, I feel that way too. And the only thing we can do is we can take it to the cross, right? We can go before the Lord and say, Father, I'm sorry. My heart is so angry and bitter. Will you forgive me and change? Please change my heart. See, it's not enough to just say, come out and be chipper and friendly, you know, just have a nice tone of voice. I mean, those are important things, but it doesn't deal with the heart. Only the Lord can change our heart. Same thing with for kids, right? So I'm like, can we pray together and ask the Lord to change your heart, to make it a heart that's beautiful? In fact, in here they have a wonderful illustration of a black heart and a white heart as far as just kind of dark, you know, dark, grouchy. Here, conflict starts in the heart. Our choices come from our hearts. If our hearts are filled with selfish desires, we will often make choices that lead to conflict. But if our hearts are filled with desire to love and please God, we'll usually make choices that promote peace. So it goes down here, you know, I want to do, what's that over here? What I want to do when I want to do it, right? Here's the desire and the demand. I know I'm right and you're wrong. I don't care if it belongs to him. I'm going to take that watch. And here's this self-centered, proud, selfish, envious, jealous person, right? Again, it's not enough to just say, don't steal the watch, right? You got to get back down here to the heart. Well, then we look at the heart here, which is a God-centered heart that is unselfish, humble, content. The fruit of the Spirit is joy, love, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control. You know, I need to look out for others as well as myself. What a cool watch Tony has. I sure like to have one too, but for now, mine's good enough. Could you please help me to understand what you think I did wrong? I mean, it sounds simplistic, but I've seen it worked out in the lives of children. Many times kids just have not been presented with this material. They just haven't really thought through it. I can have a selfish heart, or I can have a God-centered heart, that kind of thing. So, yes?
With teenagers, it's hard because you're not teaching them. I mean, you are, but you want to let them try to manage it for a while, but I don't know how long you let them struggle.
Yeah, and I'm not a mom, so everybody here with children, you can jump right in. I'm not an expert in it. You know, where's that boundary? But I think Fred and I, my husband and I, have that same thing in our lives too, you know. We're not constantly, I mean, if Fred jumped on me for every sin I ever did, we would have no conversation except my sin. So, you know, how much do you let us just kind of grow and struggle and grow and struggle and... But especially teenagers. I will let you know, though, there's an excellent book. Age of Opportunity. Has anybody ever heard of this? Mm-hmm. This is a great curriculum. Paul Tripp, I really respect him and trust him. He's a thinker. You know, he's a thoughtful man, vigorously biblical. But he talks about how so often we approach the teenage years with dread. Right? If you can just survive the teenage years, right? It's just this awful thing. He says, no, it's an age of opportunity. And he has a whole curriculum. This book is actually very helpful too, but there's a whole curriculum based upon it for parents and moms and dads and homeschoolers or public schoolers or whatever. But it goes through, you know, how can we approach the teenage years as an age of opportunity instead of an age of dread? Because kids pick up on it, right? When we head into it and say, oh, my kid's 12, almost 13. Oh, man, do I feel for you, right? The kid hears that, right? They know the child is hearing that. So instead, I find it to be very, very helpful. But people I know of teenagers have said it, and that's what really matters because I don't have kids. So I have nothing. Yes?
You're starting to deal with teenagers. Does this, I assume this applies to any age, but it's simplified.
Yeah.
Is it one to go through with a teenager?
You know, this is too young for teens. We're working actually in conjunction with another ministry to develop a teen curriculum. But what we use right now is the adult materials for teenagers. Yeah, it's too young. You know, there are 12 lessons actually in the Young Peacemaker, and then there's 12 activity booklets. So I was thinking if you wanted to, I could just hand them around and you guys could kind of look at some activity booklets if you want to sort of stuff them. And see, but each one of the lessons has a corresponding activity booklet. So for standalone kids, you know, kids who are old enough, they can just flip through it and do the exercises, do the little puzzles, color it in, you know, all the kind of activity book. But for younger children, you'd need to actually walk them through it a little bit. Do you guys, are you sitting there thinking, no way, there's no way this could possibly work? Or does it sort of resonate a little bit like, you know, there's hope, this might actually be helpful in the lives of children? You can be honest, because, you know, I didn't write the book, I'm not going to get myself. What do you think? Does it seem like reasonably or possible?
In theory, it's wonderful. How do we apply it?
Yeah, that's what I really do think. The first step is you yourself have to begin living it out. If you're not making those kind of confessions to your spouse or your neighbor or your friends or, you know, whoever it is, then your kids aren't going to see it. So how to start living it out, you got to start with yourself. Because kids will know if you're saying, do as I say, not as I do. So, yep.
I teach middle school, and I've never heard of this, but what I've always done is if children have a conflict before they can come to me, they need to step away from the group so there's not like people ganging up and discuss it and try and work it out. And then if they can't, then they come to me for help. Mm. And the three of us work it out.
Mediation.
And usually they can almost always work it out themselves because they can't come and join the group until they've figured out the problem.
It's great.
Yeah, in elementary school there's something called conflict managers. And
right.
But what happens with that, and you watch it on the playground, it doesn't get to the heart issue, it stops the conflict.
Yeah.
Right.
It's all.
The kind of surface of the behavior.
So the conflict is dealt with, but those kids still are steaming inside. You know, later on they'll talk about it.
Not so much with my class. Maybe because they were a real small Lutheran school. But they seem to, you know, I oftentimes if I feel it was a deep thing, I'll ask them, now, are you okay with the discussion? Are you okay? And they say yes, and they seem for the most part to have figured things out. I don't know if they've done everything that you say. You know.
Yeah. And again, it's not so much us. I just want to really encourage that. Hopefully, we're just pointing people to the scripture. You know, this is Matthew 18. All this is just Matthew 18 and Matthew 7 and Proverbs and James and Philippians 3. And, you know, it's all those scriptural principles just kind of tied together. Because it's a powerful thing to sit between two children and have one say, I'm sorry. Will you please forgive me? And to hear another child say the words, I forgive you. See, again, those are words and skills that adults, we don't live out. Why? Because we didn't learn them as children, right? But if we raised up this generation, the next generation, who could say, you know, hey, you guys are in a conflict. Can I sit down and help you? I oversee our international certification program. It's a network of trained, certified Christian conciliators. We administer cases worldwide. And one of my favorite stories, a guy named Michael Ortiz in Florida. He went through, he's a lawyer, and he went through our training. Now he's a candidate for certification, just a super guy. Well, one day he and his wife were just in a huge conflict. I mean, they wouldn't even look at each other. And these are like, you know, trained peacemakers, yeah, whatever, bunch of sinners, that's all we are. But they wouldn't even look at each other. And so their little daughter, I think she's 9 years old, she came over and she said, Mom, Dad, we need to do some peacemaking, she said, because they had gone through the curriculum and prayed together and worked through this stuff. And so she said, come out into the living room and let's talk. Well, he sat over in a chair and she sat on the couch. You know, they wouldn't even sit in the same area. And she said, no, Mom, you come over here and sit here. Dad, you sit here. And she sat in between them and she said, Dad, don't you have something you want to say to Mom? This is like a trained guy, right? I mean, certified. And Mom, do you have something you want to say to Dad? So she said, well, Dad, are you loving Mom like a husband is supposed to love his wife like Jesus? Are you loving her? Mom, are you loving Dad like a Christian wife is supposed to love? You know, she just went through, Mom, what did Dad do that made you so mad? Daddy, did you do that to Mom? Well, don't you need to apologize? I mean, she mediated their conflict. And at the end, you know, they actually did repent. I mean, her persistence in pulling out of them and helping him to ask his wife's forgiveness and her, well, Mom, don't you want to forgive Dad? Just like God forgives us in Jesus? Why don't you tell Dad you forgive him? You know, she's nine. You know, she's 9 years old. She mediated the conflict with this lawyer and this, you know, very, very gifted, intelligent, godly wife. I mean, she's so super. So that's what we're talking about here, you know, is raising up the kids to help us. Because that's like, any of you familiar with Ted Tripp's book, Shepherding a Child's Heart? It is so good. I'm reading it now in the hopes that we might be able to adopt a child or have a child someday. But it talks about these very things that it's not enough to just deal with the surface level. Let's get underneath. Just like God does with us, right? He gets down to our heart issues and helps to shepherd the heart. Other things that come to mind, or I can show you a few other things in the Young Peacemaker curriculum. Thoughts that are burning on your mind. I was trying to think of a game we could play so you could win more prizes, but I never can think of. So if you think of a game we can play, let me know about that one too. One of them I really like is called the Communication Pie. And what it talks about here is how do we make a respectful appeal? Isn't it true that children are in the position of weakness? Right? They don't have power or authority. They don't have money or resources. So children need to learn how to negotiate, right? To make respectful appeals. And so it talks all about here that when we go to communicate well for children, it takes not just respectful words, but we need to have a respectful tone of voice. respectful body language and respectful listening skills. So it helps children, and I really like, there's some pictures here where they actually draw like a gesture, you know, of kind of, you know, mom, dad, you know, it's very respectful, kind of good eye contact, respectful body. But then there's one too, you know, where it's like this, you know, where there's like this, where there's anger, you know, and the facial expression. So it actually helps children to look, I think the activity booklet looks at different facial expressions and helps them to identify, you know, is this demonstrating patience or anger, frustration, demand, or receive? Does that make you kind of see? I never learned that as a child. I don't know that many adults have learned that yet. You know, that when we go to make a respectful appeal, it helps if we use a gentle tone of voice and a nice body language. I really like that about the curriculum. But other things? Yes.
Okay, as a parent, you've got a situation, whether it be a cookie at some time or whatever, where it's really not flexible. There's a lot of situations where you cannot go running in the road. I'm sorry, you can't put your hand on the bird. You are in a position of authority. You've set the rules, you said no. They still proceed.
Consequences.
They want to negotiate. They want to pursue it. There is no flexibility in whatever the issue is.
Oh, sure. In fact, one of my favorite chapters. All of them, I shouldn't say that anymore because it's losing its impact. But it's really, really helpful. Is chapter 3, lesson 3, choices have consequences, right? And it actually talks exactly about that, that you can make a respectful appeal, and if a person of authority says no, but you don't either you don't listen and you go ahead and do it anyway, or you keep whining and complaining and just nagging and having a temper tantrum, then your choices are actually going to have consequences. They actually talk in here about double consequences, right? So, for instance, if you didn't ask for permission to do something and you did something wrong, you're going to have a consequence for that. But if you specifically asked for permission and your parent or guardian or whoever said no, and then you went ahead and did it anyway, you're going to have double consequences, because now you're going to have a consequence of the wrong you did, as well as the fact that you disobeyed someone who's an authority, your teacher, right, or parent or guardian or whatever. So again, it's not to say, hey, we're going to let them make a respectful appeal and we're always going to go with it, right? I mean, again, sometimes children don't know what's best for them. But at the same time, it does talk a lot about you're going to make a bad choice, you're going to bear a bad consequence. A good choice, a good consequence. And that's the same way in life, right? Scripture talks a lot about that, the foolish and the wise. If we make a foolish decision, then we're going to bear bad fruit. But if we are wise with the wisdom that comes from heaven, we're going to bear good fruit. Did you have another question? Or are you stretching?
I was going to push it a little farther.
Well, that's Holden. Isn't this fun? Aren't we having a good time? I'm thinking, oh man, everybody jump in.
You're either the person in authority or your employer or something has made a decision that is black and white to them, but they're wrong.
That's a great question. And that's sort of veering off a young peacemaker, but it applies too, so I think it's worth discussing. You know, is that obviously there's a lot of things. If you look at all of Scripture, there's Romans 13, which says that all authority is God instituted, right? God institutes authority, even bad authority. I'm struggling with this one for those of you who were at my session yesterday, because there's a situation happening at work. I know, peacemaker ministries, you know, but we're just a bunch of sinners. But you know, where again, it's, if somebody in authority, you can make a respectful appeal. You can try to give all the information. You can be as gracious as possible. But ultimately, you have to submit to that authority. Now, does that mean that you should renounce your faith? Of course not. Does that mean that you should, you know, cause the harm of another person? For instance, the whole Nazi Germany authority? Of course not. I mean, we're not talking about direct sin. You know, you did not submit to someone in authority and go out and murder somebody, right? Or slander somebody. I mean, those things are pretty clear cut. But just where it's a wisdom call, you know, and you say, I disagree, this is not the right decision. When I pray daily that I would submit to the people under whose authority I serve, especially when I disagree with them. Because see, that's it. If we only submit to the people who are over us in authority when we agree with them, it's not really submission, is it? Big deal. That's like loving your friends. Jesus says, love your enemies. So my responsibility is to make as respectful of an appeal, give all the information I can, be passionate about it even, but ultimately, if they say no, then I need to be 100% in support of that decision. Now, if it's a sin issue or a justice issue where I cannot go along with it, then I need to resign my position. Right? But you're going to
fire calling if it's something like.
If it's a sin issue, yeah, I mean, if it's a sin issue, a life and death issue, that kind of thing, obviously. But again, you can also have, you always want to think about, everybody who's in authority is under authority. So for instance, if my boss, and I don't believe it's true, but if my boss were sinning, right, and he was making a decision, I would appeal to him, but ultimately, if he was hardened in his heart and wasn't listening, I would go to who his authority is. I would tell him, I'd say, Gary, I'm going to go to Ken because this is so serious. Can we go together, right? And we're going to go together. People who are in an ecclesiastical body, if you're in a church, you can appeal for help to the deacons and elders and pastors, to the denominational district, that kind of thing. So you make respectful appeals. I have people underneath me in the ICC. I serve them. I'm over them in authority. I serve them. And I mean, we talk about this regularly at our team meetings, because if I'm doing something that they don't agree with, it's their job to bring me that information, because I could be wrong. But at the same time, if it's just a wisdom call, I might have information they don't know. And so they need to submit to it and support it. But if they think I'm truly damaging or I'm sinning or whatever, then their job is to go to Gary and to help me.
Okay, I'm getting a lot out of this, but okay, your environment and everything else, everybody is rational and willing to listen. Sometimes kids lose it, whether it be ice cream pies or whatever. I was standing on a street corner with a 10-year-old who was throwing a temper tantrum, and I had my arms around her because she was going to go into the street. And she started yelling, "You're not my mother, you're not my mother," and just.
Yep.
It was not a peaceful situation. People were picking up their cell phone and calling the cops. I'm positive of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and again, what we're talking about here, you can't do this with the child who's in a tantrum, can you? No. You put them in their room until they're sane enough, and it might be 2 days, I don't know, you know, until they're able to come down and talk about it. You know, but when they come down, you don't just say, "Oh, I'm really glad you've calmed down now. Let's just go on with our lives." Right? You're going to go back and you're going to talk about what was the desire that got elevated to a demand. The demand got frustrated and then the tantrum happened. Yeah. See, that's the key. So when they come back more rational, you don't just stop at the surface. It's hard stuff. Please don't. I hope I'm not sounding like I think it's easy. I think parenting is the hardest job in the whole world. And there's a lot of things I think I might possibly do without totally, totally blowing it. But parenting just freaks me out. So, you know, this is just my little effort here. Well, let me just wrap up with a couple concluding thoughts, and then I'd like to show you a brief video. We'll be sure to end on time. We've already talked about that peacemaking does not come naturally, that it takes time, it takes effort. I want to leave you with two pictures. For those of you who are familiar, we talked already about Daniel. When Daniel went into captivity in Babylon, he was a teenage boy. Do you know that? Daniel was a teenager when he was sticking to his commitment to the Lord to not eat unclean food, when he was negotiating rationally with the armed guards. That was Daniel. He was so equipped with biblical peacemaking that he was able to do that. Another teenage Old Testament hero was Esther. Esther was just a teenager when she did all that she did. And so, again, you know, we may think children or teenagers or whatever, but just don't give up on them, because I really believe that God will use this generation. You look at all the of course, the physical violence in the schools, the guns and the murders and that, but also just the emotional violence, you know, the hatred and the bitterness and the cliques and the gossip and the slander and the meanness and the pettiness. There is such an opportunity for children who are equipped to go into those environments and to be peacemakers and to change the world. I mean, not just their little class, not just their school, not just their community, but the whole world. Because those kids are going to go out, they're going to work in vocations and labor. They might go to college or grad school. They might lead nations. So that's what I'm talking about equipping kids. So let me show you one video, and we'll be off for a minute.
Mom, have you talked with Janet?
Oh, of course I have, dear.
Oh, really? Well, you know, what's she saying?
She asked me to fix the lasagna.
Mom, that's not what I'm talking about. Have you talked with her about the way that she treated you and how she just booted you out of the ministry?
Oh, she did nothing of the sort. I'm still a part of the women's group. I'm just not in leadership anymore. enjoy the extra time. Mom, that's not true. That's just it. You are in leadership. And those women chose you to be a chairperson for a reason. And then Janet Farley comes along and usurps your authority.
Now, that's not entirely true. She didn't usurp.
She is just a go-getter, a very energetic person. Mom, she is using that group as her social kingdom, and you know it. When you were leading the women's ministry, we did meaningful things. And our programs were centered around practical issues like, you know, being a good wife or raising your children or, you know, learning how to love others and helping the disadvantaged. But Janice just turned that upside down. You need to talk to her.
Honey, things just have a way of working themselves out.
Yeah, that's what Custer said when I saw those Indians running over the hill. Mom, you need to talk to her.
Well, honey, I wouldn't know what to say. You know I'm not very good at that type of thing. And Jen's doing a fine job.
And that doesn't bother you?
No, of course not.
Okay, what about last week?
Oh, that was just a Freudian slip.
Mom, a Freudian slip is when you're mad at Dad and you mean to say pass the beef, but instead you say pass the beast. That's a Freudian slip. When we were at that stoplight last week and you said, that Janet Farley has just ruined my whole life. I just wish she would shrivel up and die.
Mom, that's not a Freudian slip. You know what I mean. I was just daydreaming and it sort of slipped out.
And can't you see how that's just the tip of the iceberg of what's going on inside? You really need to talk to her.
What would I say? I have no idea what to say.
You know what to say.
No, I don't know what to say. And I told you this doesn't bother
what
me.
What does it bother you?
None of this bothers me.
It bothers me.
Anyone.
Well, what doesn't bother
Nothing
you?
Nothing bothers me.
Well, then what are you going to say?
Nothing. I told you.
Okay, I'm Janet. Pretend that I'm Janet, and you just tell me what you want to say.
Oh, Freya.
Tell me how you're feeling. Come on, this is your chance.
Stop.
Claire. Claire, I'm Janet. Tell me.
I'm my mom.
Tell me, Claire. Tell me how you feel.
This is not funny.
You're no longer hurting. And tell me how you feel.
It's not funny.
Tell me.
I am not a cow. I am not a nobody. You made me feel like some old woman who's lost her balance. All I wanted to do was serve God, and I thought that's what I was doing, but then you come along. And everyone thinks everything you're doing is the most wonderful thing. It's important. It's exciting. We could have at least talked. The least you could have done is called me one time to ask for my opinion, but you never called. What was I supposed to do? Say no? What was I supposed to be? A wet dish rag to put a damper on everyone else's fun? Old fuddy-duddy. That women's ministry was very important to me. And now you've made me look like some old grandma in the corner talking to myself. I hate you, Janet Farley.
Whoa. That was some Freudian slip. Mom, this is killing you. And maybe not physically, but certainly spiritually. You need to talk to her.
Wonderful illustration of children being equipped. Woo! There's so many more videos on this. What a wonderful thing. So this is what we're talking about, equipping our children to help us, to help the nations, all of those good things. I forgot to tell you one quick story. Since we have a few minutes, can I tell you one more story? I love this story. Ken and Corlett's daughter Megan and their son Jeffrey were being taught on this idols of the heart thing. And you know, the easy way to teach that is, you guys know from VeggieTales, da bunny, right? And so the golden calf and Old Testament and bowing down to the false god, right? That's kind of teaching the idols, the golden calf and all of that. Well, the next day they were at McDonald's and they were, I mean, into it over the Happy Meal toy. It was one of those little plastic dinosaur type things. And they were mine, give me. I mean, they were going back and forth. And finally, Corlett, she just took up this little plastic toy. She said, Jeffrey, Megan, what is this? And Jeffrey said, Mom, it's the golden rhinoceros. And again, though, it was just a teaching and the normal dailiness of life, you know? A good desire, I want to play with the toy, elevated to a demand, it gets frustrated. The golden rhinoceros. So that's the story. Any closing comments before we end our young peacemaking time together? You guys can do it. You can equip your children, your grandchildren, nieces, nephews, churches. This is used in Sunday school curriculums all the time. The copyright is such that you can make as many copies as you want of the activity booklets for as many students as you have in your class or children in your family. So we want it to be out there. You know, it's not something you want to hold on to. So. Parting shots? Thank you very much.